This episode of iRescue Radio is brought to you by ProCPR.org. Online CPR training, when you want it, where you want it.
And welcome back to iRescue Radio. I'm Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking about a man who survived a shark attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His head was in its mouth.
Oh, you gave it away.
Well, it's still kind of tantalizing. We don't know if he...
Okay. Save it.
We don't know if he lost his head and survived.
Well...
Like the headless man. We don't know that
Dan
yet.
Thinks he lost his head when he got in the water.
Yeah.
That's
okay. Whole different topic.
I've developed a persona on this show.
No. I just think you thought it unwise of him to get in the water with sharks.
I think everyone should live inside a bubble and never take any chances in this life at all.
When you told me about the little boy that got hurt, everybody should be walking around in gerbil bubbles.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Why not?
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking about hormone replacement therapy. Now, this is top stories here. Hormone replacement therapy has now been deemed to increase the chance for women to get cancer. One study shows by over 56% increased risk of cancer.
Man, that's incredible.
Now, we're going to be talking about some of the dimensions of that story. That's going to be our top medical news. Mm-hmm. And
it's going to be good.
That's going to be good. I want to know, though, have you had anything happen in the last week where
sorry.
You wanted to live in a bubble?
After I topped my golf ball? Drilled it into the ground in front of the crowd.
Dan, you need to tell us about your golfing exploits.
Tell us about the knuckles.
Many of you have probably seen the Seinfeld episode whereby Jerry keeps engaging this other guy who keeps coming up and trying to give him high fives.
Oh, that kind
of Jerry hates high fives.
Sorry.
Knuckles. Knuckles was the theme of the weekend at my golf.
Oh, no. Man.
And to the point that I was almost ready to hug the guy instead of having to give him knuckles. Just anything to break up the monotony of the knuckles.
Yep. You can drive just about anything too far.
You know, say congratulations, nice hit.
Pat him on the bottom if you want to, even once in a while.
Thank you. But
please, don't hit my knuckles.
Knuckles.
Again.
Now, the only time I've enjoyed doing it recently is when your little boy, my godson, comes up and says, "Nickels,
nickels." Park the car.
And I'm so excited about it, that I just can't help but give him nickels. So he's so dang cute.
Yeah. Too bad he comes up to me now right after I get home from work, just starts punching my legs.
Does he?
He's just like,
who taught him that?
You know, you've ever seen two dogs run and just tumble?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And my wife says, he's been waiting to hit you all day.
Oh, funny. You little guy.
Little wanna.
Come here and bruise my kneecaps.
He's a lot of fun.
So anyway, that's what but it's got to stop.
So, Dan, today I will not give you knuckles.
No knuckles today. Let's do...
But I'm not patting on the butt, though. That's out.
All right.
Sorry.
It's good enough for NFL.
Well, that's in the heat of the battle, right?
That's right.
I mean, that's...
Heat of the battle. Jeez, heat of the battle.
We're talking about getting off the phone on a good sales call and going, that was awesome!
Yeah. Still, leave my butt alone.
Why can't we just real quick high five? You know? Just... Yes, and then walk by.
It's more touchy than I'm comfortable with.
With a high five?
Yeah.
Really?
On occasion, in the right environment, I guess I'd have to type it all out.
You'd rather have a pat on the butt?
No. Well,
Joey, why are you stuck on pats on the butt?
Because
I'm telling you, as a coach,
Jody's just
I got
like
players
going over
that respond to my commands.
I'm stuck
and run plays and take chances. I just get
fired up.
Fired up.
Yeah.
And I'm slapping tushes and I'm patting on the helmets.
Sure.
I'm, you know, whatever.
Grabbing their face mask and
doing headbutts when I don't have the helmet on.
Yeah. I wonder what those funny marks were on your forehead.
Drip, drip.
We could give each other headbutts.
Yeah. No thanks.
Now, headbutts are okay.
Come here, you.
but nickels and high fives, you know, when
it's got to go.
It's gotten too T-level.
It's got to go.
There we go.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
Teed off.
I wonder what our wives do. If we're doing knuckles and high fives.
They're huggers.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Annie's not much of a hugger. I wonder if she's... I don't know. I wonder what she does.
Don't know. We have to find that out.
Yeah. I'm not going to... Yeah.
Maybe a punch in the shoulder.
I think we need to let them speak for themselves.
Yeah.
Our conjecture.
I guess I'm just wondering to guys is knuckles and high fives, what is it to our wives?
Teardrops?
That's it. A good cry together.
Maybe verbals. Maybe verbals. Like,
it is. You go, girl.
You're sweet.
You go.
You're darling.
Cute as a button.
Cute as a button.
There's inside story.
Yeah, inside story on that one. Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
We've taken too much of your time.
Yeah.
Allow us to move forward.
Ready or not, it's time for this week's Hot Topic.
So this guy survives a shark attack. He's on the coast of Australia, 30 foot of water, swimming through the seaweed, collecting abalone.
Which, I don't know what that is.
It's a precious stone. It's like, not a precious stone, it's a shell, isn't it?
I believe it's a shell that
it's beautiful. It polishes they make jewelry up. Out of mm-hmm. it. So.
Yeah. And he possesses a tool.
It's a chisel.
Chisel.
Yeah,
to chisel it out.
He scraped it off.
Right. Thankfully, he had the chisel because it's what saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
So he immediately finds himself head first inside the mouth trying to be swallowed by a 2 meter.
5 meter.
No, it's a two.
Oh, 2 meter?
Yeah.
Oh. Because they were looking for a 5 meter that had been swimming
yeah,
around
15 footer.
There.
Yeah. Yep.
It's big.
Yeah, I don't care.
It's a shark.
Yeah.
It's bigger than what would fit in my tank.
Hey, it was big enough that the man's head was in its mouth, and its teeth were around his chest and shoulder.
Can you imagine? Can you just imagine?
The man's life had to be flashing through it. I mean, just...
Well...
I'm done.
Panic.
All it's
done.
Over.
Panic. Because had that shark gotten a good bite and done its dog shake,
mm-hmm.
the shark shake... It probably would have ripped his head off.
Well, it said it crushed his mask and crushed his nose.
So he wasn't breathing either.
No. So he's holding his breath the
now
whole time?
30 feet below the
well,
surface.
Well, his mask. He could have kept his regulator in his mouth.
Yeah, that's true.
And breathed through his regulator. It sounds like he was an expert diver.
Yeah.
If he wasn't, he wouldn't have survived.
Yeah, does this for a living, so he knows.
And proceeded to gouge this shark in the eyeball.
With a chisel.
With the chisel. So it's fair play now.
Yeah. You can't see me.
You want a piece of me.
Yeah, but he's injured.
Well, he's cognizant enough to know this is a one-timer.
Yeah.
I gotta start hacking and slashing, or this is game over.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So he's released.
Only
for a brief moment, and it reattacks, and it chomps on his chest, his torso.
Torso, mm-hmm. yeah.
What I didn't realize is these... divers, fools, have lead.
It's their living.
Lead vests. The lily lead vests.
And do you think that was just by chance? I don't think so.
Well, they indicate that they've wondered if wearing these chests for a functional purpose, which is to
vests.
To keep them below water. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they can wear a lead belt or a lead vest. They're doing the vest just in case. Now they're saying this post shark attack.
Very smart though.
That. It protected him.
That's what saved his life.
You know, why aren't they using titanium? You know, there's these... Have you ever seen the dragon skin technology?
I wonder if it has to do with salt
water. So it's all...
Kevlar, though, is dragon skin, I believe. Yeah. And it's in scales.
Scales, yeah.
So that you can fully flex and move.
Yep.
It's being developed for the military. It's flexible enough that you can... I mean, these guys aren't diving just for the fun of it. This is their job, by the sounds of it. They're mm-hmm. diving for abalone. So, you know, when I worked on the ambulance and had to work night shift, I wore a vest. I wore a bulletproof vest.
And you weren't supposed to
you
wear
it. You did?
No, we could.
Oh, you could?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, we could. Where did you get
we were told
them?
No, we could.
We were told.
We can't carry weapons.
Right. We were told on our AMs we were not allowed to wear a vest.
Oh, that's crazy.
Why? Because it looked unprofessional.
No, forget that.
Well, wouldn't you put it underneath?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
They said it would be threatening and look unprofessional.
No, forget that.
We're not allowed to wear bulletproof vests.
I'm glad it didn't work for your agency.
I wonder how threatening and unprofessional it looks when you're laying in your casket.
Dead.
Exactly.
Right. Anyways, getting back to the point, if these guys had some kind of dragon skin technology on,
yeah,
though it wouldn't help their neck probably.
Right.
And I'm telling you now, chisel would just be the beginning. I mean, there are these anti-shark weapons.
Yeah. Well, knife, particularly. I mean, don't they often carry...
I wonder... Well, cattle prods and that kind of stuff.
They have those electric...
Underwater, you can still use them.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
I thought so, yeah.
Hmm. So, maybe some non-lethal...
So, he floats to the surface. Yeah, or assists with the surface.
Swims to the surface.
Yeah.
And, in a pool of blood.
Oh.
Yeah.
And his son, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said his son.
His 25-year-old son sees him emerge from the seaweed.
Yeah.
And this guy that's attacked says... Shark attack! Shark attack! Yeah. Get me out of the water! I mean, he's got the wherewithal to be say, "Get me to shore! Get me to shore!"
I mean, the picture of the guy is—he's on a stretcher, he's being hauled away,
but he looks no worse than a bad accident.
Yeah,
you know, here's my struggle. He'll be back in the water in a month.
Yeah. He's 41.
You guys are okay with that?
Yeah.
Because you know what? If I fall off my motorcycle today, I'm back on it. It's the same kind of thing. Hey, you do what you love.
He's 41 years old. He makes a living collecting abalone. construction workers have fallen.
I'll find another hobby. Another job.
Construction workers have fallen 3-4 stories. What else are they going to do?
I don't say that they're correct in their mind.
Whoa, here we go.
I'm sorry. Don't go back. I wouldn't have gone there to begin with. These surfers that keep going back in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's got to be safer things to do.
There's got to be safer things to do.
I can sit in my kitchen and make cookies.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, guess what else is happening in Australia? The mystery of the falling birds raining from the sky. Did you read about that?
Kind of like a song.
You're around. Just like me, we long to be
close to you. Carpenter's close to you.
Why do birds suddenly appear?
All over the ground.
In Australia.
They're falling on my head.
Yep. So anyways, this story is talking about how they're getting poisoned. It's organophosphates, basically. So there's been several occasions of this, but they're finding is that the pest control that they're using for fruit flies and for other types of pests,
it's taking them all out.
It is. It's killing them. They're falling to the earth in seizures, and they've had several times where this has happened. The birds began dropping out of the sky in the beachside Perth suburb of Woodman Point over several days last July, sparking a big investigation into local industries. Post-mortem examinations on dozens of carcasses failed to establish a cause of death, but fentheon poisoning was ruled out at the time, according to the DEC. Now, there were 5,000 birds, including yellow-throated miners, honey-eaters, and wattle birds that were killed by lead carbonate blowing through Esperance as it was being exported through the town's port. They took some blood samples of some people here, and they had dangerously high levels of lead and other poisons in their bloodstream as well, in adults and children. So what they're doing is investigating, because the dump has got poisons in it. The sprays are killing the birds. They had a poisonous gas release into the air, so the birds were inhaling it and actually literally falling out of the sky. So
when you appear,
I mean, Three Mile Island seems like nothing compared to this. These people have got to be wondering, as I'm sitting here thinking about this, guys, every year in my township, crop dusters.
I know it.
I don't know what they're spraying.
They're
spraying for
poison.
Yeah,
the moths
to kill
moths,
gypsy moths
and the mosquitoes for the West Nile.
My local representatives swear to me that it's safe.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, there's different things they spray. In fact, where I used to live in the fruit, it's called the fruit belt, basically, where they had the apple trees or the cherry trees and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. There's three different times a year they spray three different things. There's a hot spray. They call it a hot spray. That's the most poisonous. That's the actual neurotoxin that they spray.
Great.
They only spray that one time a year.
Oh,
and then the rest of your, most of you are talking about fungicides. And so anytime after it rains, you're getting a fungicide put on. Yeah,
those aren't healthy either. So
they're not healthy, but they're not going to kill you like the neurotoxin.
Well, none of it's going to kill you. That's the whole thing. I think none of it really kills you dead. And so then they get deemed safe. What they don't tell you is all the toxicity levels and the side effects and all the problems that it causes long term.
Right, yeah. well, it's obvious. The birds are falling from the sky.
Falling out of the sky.
Has got to be... can you say red herring?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but... birds
it's dropping from the sky.
Birds have been a telltale sign of poison in the area for a long time.
Yeah.
The canary test.
Yeah, there you go.
The canary test. That's it. If you send a canary in and it dies,
don't
go in.
You know.
Yeah. But we're getting smarter now. We're more intelligent. We must still be evolving. Anyways, on to top medical news.
iRescue Radio's top medical news.
Now, this is quite disturbing. We, as I joked around about, we say we're, you know, getting smarter, but unfortunately, I think sometimes our zest and zeal for life overtakes our common sense. And in 1960, studies on high estrogen levels because of birth control pills were already in the works because of side effects that women were starting to feel when they began taking the pill, quote unquote, the pill. Mm-hmm. 50 times higher doses than normal. I think it was written down in there. So when you look at this report that came out, this is from the American Society of Clinical Oncology, from the ASCO 45th annual meeting, says hormone replacement therapy increases risk for death from non-small cell lung cancer. Another adverse effect from hormone replacement therapy in postmenopausal women has emerged. The use of combined progestin and estrogen hormone therapy increases the risk for death from non-small cell lung cancer. Mm-hmm. The findings come from a secondary analysis of the Women's Health Initiative study, which found that among current smokers who were using hormones, 1 in 100 experienced an avoidable death during the 8 years of the study. 1 in 100 is a colossal mortality for a treatment that is used for symptom management, said lead author Rowan Chlebowski, MD, PhD, medical oncologist at the Los Angeles Biomedical Research Institute at Harbor UCLA Medical Center.
Hmm. So it's well documented, and this is an issue that's been studied for years. Some of the reading that I was doing on the whole idea of the cancer, it was a study they released here. I think it was back in March. They had a big study they released on how the levels of cancer, or I'm sorry, the levels of estrogen that were found in the bloodstream of those ladies that had breast cancer and it returned, the recurrence of it, they were more than double. The ladies that had the recurrence of breast cancer had more than double the amount of estrogen in their blood than the ladies that did not have a recurrence of the breast cancer.
It's crazy. Dan was asking a question about, well, why is estrogen so cancer-causing? So we looked it up, and through Cornell University, it says it gave us a little synopsis, and we're going to paraphrase it for you. But basically, estrogen being a sex hormone affects cell multiplication. And so when you have a cancer cell, and there's a hormone that helps it duplicate or multiply—
Right.
It can make these cancers grow extremely quickly and vigorously.
Mm-hmm. So you would suggest predispose one.
And there's some research, I think, that states that. Are you more prone to having cancer? Well, were you more prone genetically to having cancer in the first place?
Right.
But I think even anything, everyone has normal cell multiplication. It's whenever we have something that's introduced in that causes this excessive cell multiplication.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
That we could take otherwise normal, healthy people and bring about probably additional risk for cancer. Now, we were also talking about the fact that, well, don't the doctors know that? I mean, shouldn't they know that this is too much and it's causing problems? There's two sides to that from my standpoint. One is... they're giving them FDA-approved dosing regimens mm-hmm. that have been introduced into people with base hormones, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And ideally, on the double-blind studies, rats or whatever that were not subjected to necessarily other outside forces. Mm-hmm. Now, we're also talking about the fact that since the 60s, people have been taking the pill. You have all this overage of estrogen. It's mm-hmm. getting urinated out of the body and put back into the water systems. The water systems were never designed in their purification mm-hmm. to remove that molecule, those right. medications. And it's not just estrogen and progesterone and different things like that and progestin. It's a lot of other medications as well. Heart medications.
Okay.
We've got, you know, antidepressants. We're kind of picking on hormone replacement therapy here, but we're talking about lots of medications in the mm-hmm. water that we drink in the cities, especially municipal.
Yeah.
So we have this additional dosing of estrogens coming into women's bodies on top of what they're being prescribed. Mm-hmm. And the estrogen and progestin that they're getting has been said by some resources that it is the level of the pill, which is an overdose of estrogen.
Right.
I mean, overdose as in it's not bioidentical.
It doesn't right size the estrogen levels.
Correct. It's peaking them. It's
spiking.
They're really going up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how many people do we know? How many women do we know that have had cancer, breast mm-hmm. Cancer, ovarian cysts, mm-hmm. fibroids, problems with menses, problems with getting pregnant, fertility issues.
Right.
Problems with obesity, problems with water retention, problems with lack of energy. I mean, all these kinds of these hormonal imbalance, depression,
mm-hmm.
Anxiety.
You know, it's interesting. I think I haven't looked it up, and I think I'm going to after the show. But what's the difference compared to 30 years ago, compared to today, on those statistics of what you just mentioned? I would imagine, just based on what we've been hearing and what we're seeing in articles, I would imagine it's significantly, completely, incredibly increased.
Well, 30 years? I mean we're talking early 60s is when this.
Yeah, and you're talking.
So we're talking almost 50 years ago.
Right. We're talking, right. This is almost, we're, and this is a new phenomenon. 50 years? We're talking 50 years. I'm not 50. I'm in the 40.
You're a big 4-0.
4-0. So this is a problem that's only 50 years old. So it's only something we're seeing now in a major way. We didn't see it then. So now we're starting to see this because it's only 50 years old, this problem.
Yeah, and it's had more time. And we're starting to get past that 20, 30, 40 years of having this.
Well, you have. You know, what I do think about, though, is when the pill was first introduced, mm-hmm. it had to be like a nuclear bomb. I mean, in its makeup. In other words, does the pill today deliver more logical doses of, you know, it's a cleaner mechanism, you would think. So the side effects in the beginning of the dissemination of the pill mm-hmm. in the early years, the proliferation of it, mm-hmm. I got to believe the side effects were way more than they are today.
Sure. I'm sure they refined the process and everything, obviously.
And there's different forms, times, too, yeah.
But still, the basic function
is estrogen,
progestin. There's a website called ditchthepill.org. I don't know much about the credibility of it, but it had some interesting points, and you know, it talks about what you guys are mentioning right now. And one of the things that it had said was in its opening sentence here is, "You were right all along." And it's talking to these women who, even way back in the 60s, said, I take this pill like it's a miracle for controlling pregnancy naturally by just not allowing me to cycle, right? Or not allowing me to have my period. Well, it's saying, you knew, you smart ones, you knew all along there was something wrong with birth control pills.
It was too good to be true.
Noticing mm-hmm. changes in your body that were simply detrimental. A good number of you became aware of your migraines, and several other female problems began soon after you started taking these oral contraceptives. So this whole, you know, this whole website is kind of dedicated to natural family planning
mm-hmm.
or a more natural family planning, and talking about some of the side effects of the pill. Now, the hormone replacement therapy that is really hitting the news right now, increasing cancer risks, is physician-directed hormone replacement therapy for premenopausal, menopausal, or postmenopausal women.
Right.
This is, again, we're talking about the pill here because it's another way that premenopausal or non-menopausal women are getting basically the same hormone replacement therapy that these high-risk cancer patients are subjected to through HRT, hormone replacement therapy, mm-hmm. for their menopausal symptoms. Mm-hmm. And the side effects include migraine headaches, PMS, premenstrual syndrome, mm-hmm. breast cancer, heart disease, heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, high blood pressure, uterine cancer, infertility, depression, postpartum depression, uterine fibroids, unnecessary hysterectomies, and anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound much like a miracle pill to me.
No. You know what's interesting? The estrogen replacement therapy that we talked about, the high levels of estrogen, and we've talked about on the show many times, the whole idea with the BPA, bisphenol A, being the estrogen mimicker in the products that we see constantly now through our plastics and through our insecticides, that all are estrogen mimickers. You can't take that out of the effect of the replacement therapy. You can't take it out of the equation. It's got to become part of the equation to increase estrogen levels. Hmm. And I think that I'm speaking as if I'm a doctor here. I'm not a doctor, but I have a feeling doctors aren't taking the natural. I shouldn't say natural. Doctors aren't taking the environmental estrogen replacements that we're getting on a daily basis from our plastics and
into account.
When
we discussed that before the show. We talked about the battery of blood tests mm-hmm. or the lack of baseline mm-hmm. of blood tests that are taken in determining your HRT, your mm-hmm. hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah.
Does it account for everything that's going on?
Depends
and that's,
yeah.
you know, if you're going to have this done, mm-hmm. and Roy, you were discussing this at length, so you could speak to it more, the battery of tests you had personally mm-hmm. for another issue mm-hmm. Revealed significantly different things going on.
Yeah, you get a blood test and it comes back with three findings because mm-hmm. one doctor only wanted to do the minimal. Yeah.
Or
the insurance would only pay for the minimal. Or the doctor's used to the insurance only reimbursing mm-hmm. the minimal.
Yeah.
And you go to another one that's more comprehensive, and it came back with 25 labs.
Correct. The complexity of things going on, you don't just replace something and have it have a simple effect,
yeah.
a simple cause and effect.
Yeah. Now, there's probably listeners that are saying, what you're talking about, I'm on the pill, I'm taking hormone replacement therapy, and I don't have any side effects. You guys are full of it, right? Well, not everyone is affected. Amazingly, many women, and this is from that Ditch the Pill website, says, amazingly, many women have done just fine, and initial observations indicate that fully 50% of women who have taken birth control pills or hormone replacement therapy haven't experienced any noticeable medical problems. This is more a credit to the resiliency of the human body rather than the actual substances themselves. We can ingest a host of toxic substances for long periods of time, and the body still manages to fight off the destructive effects. Unfortunately, not everyone has been so fortunate, and that's one reason why you're reading this report. I said that before. The reason that not all men are affected by BPA is the same reason why all women aren't affected negatively by hormone replacement therapy or the pill or menopause, even if they're fully natural. There's some women that go through menopause well and others that don't go
Or some that simply weigh the risk-benefit. Mm-hmm. It might have some mild side effects, but the benefits that they ascribe to it far outweigh the risks that they determine.
Yeah.
In the case here, you got a 50-50 split. 50% are affected, 50 aren't.
Yep.
If you're in the 50 that aren't affected, that doesn't matter to you.
Yeah, you don't even believe it.
50%, though,
if you're in the
50%, have an effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, those
it's
are the believers.
It's a huge percentage.
The people that are affected, they certainly believe in the effects of it.
And hence why naturopathy, homeopathy, nature stores have a following.
Well, mm-hmm. and that's why less than 1% of people get attacked by sharks, but I still freak out.
You're not going to go down to the dive shop.
99% success rate still deters me from swimming in the ocean.
Well, my question is,
the stingray goes between my legs.
So here's a 50% rating, and yet there are still people that crack cans of Coke open.
Or Mr. Splenda Boy sitting next to you. Oh, my wife says I'm cranky. She says it's because of Splenda. So there goes that sponsor.
Yeah. So, well, Will we ever solve this issue?
Yes. I think we're learning more and more about all the time.
I think I'm the chemistry set sitting over here.
I think education is key.
Yeah. It really is.
You look
it
at really all is. Sides. You don't just take one side of the story. You look at the pros, the cons, and in the in-betweens. And if it's and butts were candy and nuts, it'd all be a Merry Christmas.
What did you say?
Don't repeat that.
Okay. So, moving on. Let's talk about training.
Now it's time for the ProCPR.org Puzzler. What the heck would you do? ProCPR.org. Online training when you want it, where you want it.
So the scenario we're going to do today is about shark attacks.
All right.
You're swimming off the shore of Lake Michigan when a freshwater shark... What?
That's barracuda.
Okay, barracuda. Lamprey eel.
I don't think they've ever attacked.
Okay.
Okay,
it's
we're
a
pretending.
Body. It could be your swimming pool.
Okay, we're pretending.
We're pretending.
Your neighbor gets a smart idea and puts iodized salt in your swimming pool and throws its shark in. I don't know. Anyways, let's say you went to Florida.
Okay, let's say so.
Off the Keys.
Off the Keys.
Beautiful gorgeous summer waters. Day. Mm-hmm. Pristine waters.
Honey, I'll be back in 15 minutes.
You go out to look at some coral reefs and some pretty fish.
Oh, yeah.
And a 4-meter shark, great white, happens to be feeding in the area and sees you as a seal. Takes a chomp of the leg. The person you... swim back to shore. Thankfully, the shark got enough of its meal from the limb that it carried away. So you have an amputation.
Ouch.
This is a true story, by the way. A 15-year-old boy who is surfing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Lost a limb. Or with a 12-year-old female. Anyways, one of those. Anyways, it happens. Okay, we make it back to shore. What first aid do you hope someone's going to give you?
Tourniquet. Tie it down. Stitch it with the teeth.
Everybody's wearing belts on the beach.
I don't know. I don't want to know what they tied it with. Okay.
You know, I just hope that they'll stop the bleeding that's going on.
I mean, yeah. That's the main thing.
Let's say that nobody has anything to tie a tourniquet. Is all lost?
No, t-shirts work pretty well to hold on there.
He said there's nothing to tie it with, Joe.
You don't need to tie a tourniquet. I'm just saying you need to... You need to keep the blood from spewing out if it is, but your body has a natural
cauterizing
effect.
Yeah, it's not really cauterization. It's more of a constriction.
Constriction. Yeah, but if, shunting.
Isn't there some serious spots in the leg that,
a tearing or a ripping can cause more problems than actually an amputation in many cases.
Yeah. And,
because as soon as the limb is severed, those arteries contract and constrict and spasm up in. Now, they will release, usually within 3 to 6 minutes. So you do have a limited amount of time, but a lot of times in these big beaches, they do have pretty advanced lifeguard rescue.
Yeah.
Especially if they're in shores where there's lots of sharks. And I think the tourist attractions are getting... the idea. The way to keep them coming back is to make them feel comfortable with the area. So so they have the quad runners and they've got the ATVs on the beach, the beach machines that you can get them on a stretcher and get them off. And that was one of our biggest problems here in the Great Lakes is that we really don't have that advanced of a lifeguard system or even a park ranger.
Certainly not motorized.
No. And so we're usually out there in the sand in our ambulance boots trying to walk through sand with a gurney. It just doesn't work very well. Yeah. So it elongates the time to get them to the ambulance.
And the issue that I'm going to be most concerned about is shock.
Sure, absolutely. How much blood did they lose coming in, you have a volume displacement regardless because they took the leg.
Yeah.
So they're already at a disadvantage. There's all that circulating blood that was in the leg when it came off that's gone now. So they're already probably hypotensive. Mm-hmm. Now they're in pain, or maybe not in pain, but in shock because they know they don't have a leg if they saw it.
Right.
And the fact that they were psychogenically affected by the fact that they were attacked by a shark. It is going to be the rescuers, the first aid participants' goal, as Jody said, to control that bleeding as fast as possible, direct pressure, watching out for bone fragments because that can cause injury to the first aider.
Okay.
We also don't want to chip off or inject dirt or other staph or bacteria into that end of the bone, or they could die from a serious infection, blood infection, or bone infection. So we're going to keep the area clean, direct pressure. If, yes, you're right, Dan, this would be a good time that if you did have a way, even if you had to shred a T-shirt or right. shred a towel, to be able to take a strip of that and make a makeshift tourniquet. A tourniquet doesn't have to be a rope or a belt. It can be anything that's able to be tied. Tight enough to stop all bleeding. So okay. what we want to do is we want to do a simple knot, like when you tie your shoe,
right.
around the limb as close to the end of the severance as possible.
Right.
Or if it's not fully severed, as close to the injury as possible. Because the rule of thumb is, once a tourniquet's tied, it's left on until they arrive at the hospital. And without 6 minutes or more of circulation, the limb begins to die permanently. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if I always said a rule of thumb is tourniquet means limb loss.
Mm-hmm. It means the last resort.
Yep. Now, it's life over limb.
If they go into shock, how do you treat that?
Lay them down.
Okay.
Elevate the existing limb if they don't have a back, neck, or limb injury, broken bones.
Okay.
Cover them with a sheet, coat, blanket, in this case, towels, T-shirts, to maintain body temperature. They're coming out of the water, so yep. they're already going to be chilled a little bit, yep. and now they're hypotensive. Hypothermia kind of does not help us with circulation, because one of the ways that we keep our core temp warm is by shunting. So you have all this blood that's kind of being shunted to the core body for hypothermia, and then the patient starts to get warmer and it releases it again, realizing mm-hmm. that the limbs are getting cold. It's the way it reheats its limbs, and now all of a sudden you lose your core pressures.
Right.
Your circulating pressures to the brain, heart, lungs, all vital organs. And the person goes into what we call an irreversible shock syndrome it's very difficult to get them out of that. Once they start to lose their blood pressure to a level where you lose pulse, mm-hmm. there's no more compensating. Compensating is when they have rapid breathing, rapid pulse, anxiety, right?
Okay.
Non-compensatory or non-compensating shock is a very difficult spiral to pull a patient out of.
Okay.
And then, you know, if a tourniquet is not working, one could go to in this case, the femoral pressure point, which is in the groin between the genitals and the thigh,
okay.
in the bend of the leg, where the rescuer would use a palm of the hand directly down on the crease of the bend of the leg.
Got it.
There's a femoral artery that is quite large. If you've ever had a dissection or seen an autopsy, it's pretty big. It's feeding these huge, you know, quadriceps and right. hamstrings and calves and a lot of muscle, and it has to be quite big to feed that muscle.
Okay.
So it's important for us to put direct pressure. Tourniquet if you have it, tie it, put a stick or something that you can use for leverage, tie the stick into the knot with a full knot, simple knot, and then twist the stick until all bleeding stops.
Okay.
Then tie off the stick ends around the leg again or around the limb and tie it so that it does not unravel.
Okay.
There used to be a method of rotating tourniquets where you would mm-hmm. Tie it, then let it loose, then tie it, let it loose. That was to try to prevent limb loss and tissue death.
Right.
What we found is that it was actually creating clots and then releasing the clots into the circulatory system. Aha.
Yeah, so, problem.
Yeah,
okay.
Not good.
And again, it's a last resort method.
Yep, and if the patient goes unconscious?
You're going to monitor airway, breathing, circulation. Your most important concern is the airway open and clear? Is the patient breathing? If not, you need to breathe for them. If there's no signs of life, no circulation, you need to be doing CPR.
Right. No heart beat, no bleeding.
Yep.
So we got to get a heartbeat if we want to have them bleed. We don't want them to bleed, but I'm just saying, if the person's dead, we don't have to worry about their bleeding control.
Not at all.
So we get asked often as instructors, what do? Do you control the bleeding first and then do CPR? Do you do CPR and then control the bleeding? Yes.
Yeah.
Ideally, you CPR get somebody first. Maintaining direct pressure or a tourniquet, and then another person CPR. Simultaneously is doing airway breathing and circulation. Mm-hmm. If, you know, and this is not very common, but if upon every compression of the chest, you're noticing copious amounts of blood being pushed. And again, this is not common, but I could see it be more common in a full severance of a high injury on a thigh where mm-hmm. you've got femoral artery. Then you may have to somehow try to maintain some form of bleeding control. If you're all alone, which is not going to be common, mm-hmm. You do the best you can.
Yep.
You do the best you can. And when the person dies or stays dead, You go home saying, if there was any way I could have given that person a chance to see tomorrow, I did.
You did.
Okay.
The fact that they died is not because of my failure as a rescuer. Mm-hmm. So go on out to procpr.org or profirstaid.com. Actually, profirstaid.com is going to have the free video library. You can go out there and click on bleeding control. Scroll way down in the video library. There's a very comprehensive bleeding control section there on how to control amputations and bleeding control. And make sure you brush up on that. You know, it is summertime and it's time to get swimming. Don't fear the sharks. No, bring
swim
weapons.
In the Great Lakes.
Yeah. The other ocean.
Yeah, the other ocean.
There my other ocean.
The freshwater ocean. So another week at iRescue Radio.
It's gone swimmingly.
Swimming. Thank
you. Know, stay on land.
Land sharks.
Stay out of the air.
Sharky.
Stay on land. Stay inside.
Wow, yeah, we had that plane crash, too.
Yeah, wow. Utterly.
That's
utterly
terrible.
Tragic.
Air France, 200 and how many?
260-some, I thought. I mean, it was just
lightning
awful.
Strike, they think, possibly.
Yeah, the electrical occurrences.
They're wondering if a lightning bolt hit that airplane and messed up the electricity. Yeah, God bless them.
Well, I've got our poll question this week. Is the fear of what's in the water keeping you out of open water, such as in lakes and oceans? Yes or no?
All right. Well, wrapping up another week from the studios of iRescue Radio, I'm Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan.
And we'll see you next week.
If you have anything you would like to contribute to iRescue Radio, you can contact us toll free at 866-661-5701 or visit our website at irescueradio.com.
The commentaries in this podcast may not reflect the views of iRescue Radio or any of its sponsors or subsidiaries. iRescue Radio will not be held liable for any damages resulting from the advice given in this podcast.